This is WHTC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number 395-1450, and we're here with the attorney this morning. Attorney Ken Buzicki is our guest. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning, Juke.
And what's new in the legal world this morning?
Oh, you name it. It's always something. Always something. No, it's more of the same, but you know, it all falls back to people doing planning,
yeah,
of some sort, of any sort. You know, most of my time recently has been preoccupied in a lawsuit I'm involved in where the gentleman died without a will.
Oh,
and it just goes to show you, and there have been literally tens of thousands of dollars on either side in court.
Yeah.
Fighting over who gets what.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because all this guy had to do was do a will.
That's right.
And, you know, I don't know whether he didn't want to spend the $1,000 or if he thought he didn't have to, but for one reason or another, he didn't do it. And now the kids are spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and it's really a shame.
Some people don't want to do a will because it's a sign of death.
Yeah, they think if they talk about it, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess nobody wants to think about it.
Right.
Let alone talk about it. And that's where you know, I tell people, I believe it or not, I like to joke around in estate planning consultations. I try to bring a little levity to the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not a fun thing to talk about,
right?
Death or incapacity or Alzheimer's or whatever. But you know what? You got to do it. I tell people, I think it's a very selfish thing not to do an estate plan because you're not doing it for yourself.
Right.
You're doing it for your kids.
Yeah.
Don't put your kids through the agony of not having your things in line. Whether it's a health care directive, you know, do we leave dad on a respirator or don't we? I mean, that's a gut-wrenching, agonizing decision. Why leave it up to your kids? Tell them in writing.
Yeah.
I want one. I don't want this. I want a feeding tube. I don't want a feeding tube. Why put your kids through that agony? Because they're probably not thinking straight to begin with. And when you're not thinking straight to begin with, everybody's on edge a little bit, and if you have something in writing that says, here's who I want to make my decisions, here's what I want, here's what I don't want, it makes it a little easier.
Right, and we have a call on the line here. Good morning, you're online with the attorney.
Yes, good morning, Duke. One thing that I did after my husband and I divorced is I made arrangements for my gravesite,
mm-hmm,
and a marker,
mm-hmm,
and took care of the necessities of what comes next, you know, that we're not going to get out of here, you know, alive.
Right.
And the proprietor, the owner, which was a very nice young man, wasn't locally, but one that I was familiar with, and after my oldest daughter and I were done with the arrangements and the marker that I had chosen, and that was done, he came up to me and he said, this might sound strange, but this has been such a joy for me to participate in the best gift that you could give your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
He says 95% of the people, maybe that's a little high, but are so overwrought and are not prepared for this kind of, even, like you say, a will is just a, you know, brainer. Mm-hmm. But to get your resting place taken care of, he said, this is the best gift you could have ever given them.
Yeah.
So just a little food for thought. And I'm not a local, but I've lived here for 35 years. But I'm the only one out in this little farm cemetery that's got a bench. And I'm under a big old oak tree. And it's all good. It's
yeah.
all good. So, yes, keep up the good work, Ken. You too, Duke.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah. Now, those truly are words of wisdom because, you know, and taking it even a step further, a lot of people, you know, they might have a family plot at a cemetery or
yeah.
whatever, and a widow might have already purchased a headstone with her husband's name on it. All they have to do is fill in the date kind of thing.
Right.
But what about the hymns? What about the readings? What about the type of funeral you want? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Which side of your husband do you want to be buried on? You know, the right or the left? Or you want to have face to, you know, head to head, toe to toe?
You always slept on this side.
Yeah, that's right. but the more you can, and again, it's not a lot of fun to go through the planning process, but, you know, a lot of people tell me at the end of the process that it wasn't as bad as they thought it was
right,
going to be.
Right.
And that's where I think my job and any attorney's job or the mortician's job, the funeral director, their job is to make it not easy, because it's never easy, but make it at least a little simpler, and to make it thought-provoking. And at the end of the day, it's what you want. It's not. We don't want the kids to have to make these decisions, because this is not the kind of stuff you talk about at the dinner table.
Right.
Hopefully not. But the more you can do it, it is a gift for your children to have these things taken care of. And yeah, I agree with the caller. Get your funeral arrangements arranged. Make them. Buy the plot. Pick out a headstone. Pick out a casket. Have your favorite dress hanging in the closet, just in case. Let them know what you want read or not read at your funeral service.
Mm-hmm.
And they will appreciate it at the end of the day. Otherwise, things don't always, you know, go to hell in a haybasket, but a lot of times they do. And to the extent that you can avoid it by pre-planning it, absolutely.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yes, I wanted to ask him a question. Is it okay to have one power of attorney or several power of attorney for either parent, or what, two parents or one parent?
Well, I like to have each person, so mom will have a power of attorney and dad will have a power of attorney. I've seen joint documents where mom and dad both sign one document, and I guess sometimes that could work, but I like each parent to have their own power of attorney. Now, as far as naming the individuals, there's some debate as to whether you should have one kid taking care of your affairs or whether you should name two or three children to take care of your affairs. I prefer to name one person at a time so that one person is in charge, one person knows what's going on, because if you have to have two or three or four people engaging in every decision that's being made, that can become a logistical nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
My best suggestion, I think Dave Carrier would agree with his wholeheartedly, is pick one person and let them be in charge of it. If that person isn't around, name one other person, and just, you can have as many people as you want on the list. But I like naming one person at a time to take care of those affairs. That's true for health care. That's also true for finances. And it's also true for being the executor at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things should be discussed amongst the family, but there should be one person that will ultimately be the decision maker and one person that ultimately takes care of what needs to be done. But it's a great question, and there is a lot of debate about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, if you have any questions, give us a call, 395-1450. Our line's open right now, and it is usually much easier to do this all ahead of time, because when the time comes, then it's going to be a little hairy.
Right. You do it while you're thinking straight. You do it while you're, you know, and a lot of people, certainly my older clients, will have one of their kids or two of their kids come in with them.
Yeah.
Because those kids are going to be the ones doing everything.
That's right.
You know, and you want to make sure that they understand what they're in for.
Yeah.
They understand what the different documents do. I've had clients, you know, they take their healthcare power of attorney to the bank and wonder why they can't take money out of the bank. Well, because it's the financial power of attorney that you're supposed to take with
right.
you. Or they take the power of attorney to the bank to get money, but the bank account is titled in the name of the trust, and they don't know the difference between the financial power of attorney document and the trust document. Which one do you use? And having the child there at the meeting with me hopefully clears that stuff up. It's not rocket science, but it's not it's not really intuitive either. A lot of people, you know, think, oh, it, you know, we don't need to meet with an attorney. This is easy. Well, it's easy until it's not easy. It's easy until you get confused. It's easy until you use the wrong document. And it's a whole lot simpler and, in my opinion, easier to sit down with the client and the attorney with a child or two present and talk about things. Just talk about things. Who's going to get the house? Who's going to get the cottage? Who do you want to be the executor? What do you want to do with the family heirlooms? And sometimes it can get contentious. I'm not going to kid you, because especially amongst siblings, you know, but you got to get these things aired out, because they're going to come to the surface at some point, whether it's while mom and dad are alive or whether it's after they're passed away. These issues are going to come to the surface, and to the extent that you can resolve them while everybody is of sound mind, why not do it?
All right. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Good morning. I have a question about cemetery plots. I currently have one. Mm-hmm. However, I'm considering being cremated. Okay. I still want to keep that plot just in case any of my children should need it, mm-hmm. heaven forbid. Mm-hmm. But if I pass and I still own that, how should I handle that plot going on to my heirs?
Well, first of all, I don't know what you have planned for your cremains, but you could inter your cremains at the cemetery plot.
Oh, okay.
I suppose they could put you above the mantle in the living room, but you can always use your cemetery plot for your cremains. In addition, some cemeteries allow more than one person to be buried, especially if your cremains are there and one of your children passes away and they don't want to be cremated. You could have one of your kids buried there and have your cremains there. Now, that varies cemetery by cemetery.
Okay.
But
so you would suggest contacting the cemetery and ask what their policy is.
Absolutely. And again, on the same note, a lot of cemeteries, most cemeteries have a policy for what happens if you die and you've got an extra plot. Where does it go?
Okay.
And usually it goes to next of kin. And who's next of kin? If you got seven kids, well,
right.
it'll be between them to determine who gets it. But typically that cemetery plot does not have to go through the probate process like a bank account or something. Typically the cemetery has a policy in place as to where it goes when you die.
I understand. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah, hey, here's a quick question for you, and just let me know if you don't deal with this. You know, here's the deal. I have a kid who left his job last August, and they did a rollover of his 401k to his IRA, and then he got a Form 1099-R saying that he got a cash distribution when he didn't.
Well, the 1099-R is appropriate. Now, it's not taxable because he rolled it over. On the tax return, he will note that he rolled it over into an IRA. But the 401k administrator has to tell the IRS that they distributed the money.
Right, right.
But there is so he will. It's going to be a tax free distribution because it's going to be reported as income and then it's going to be deducted as a rollover and it's going to be a wash. So he doesn't have to pay tax on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very, very. It's a good question, and he's got 60 days to do that. I've seen situations where people hang on to the check from the 401k company, and they wait till 75, 76 days later, and then they try to roll it over, and they can't do it. He's got 60 days from receiving the check to roll it over into an IRA. Now, if he rolled it directly into an IRA, you don't have that issue. But the 1099-R is absolutely appropriate. But it will not be taxable because he did roll it into his own IRA.
Right, and like I said, the company did that for him, so he never actually got a check, so he doesn't have to worry
Perfect.
About any 68. So.
Perfect, cool. Yeah.
Excellent.
Great question. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, well, so get everything arranged ahead of time because it's a lot easier.
As a gift to your kids.
Yeah.
You know, if you hate your kids, don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to make it tough on the children, you know what, especially when you've got sons-in-law and daughters-in-law that you know are going to get their noses in it, do your kids a favor and get it in writing.
And maybe they'll remarry right away and your money will be used by somebody else.
Yeah, it happens. It happens all the time. So, and again, with a proper plan, that ought not happen.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's up to the child, you know, and children are driven by different motivations. You know, money that's acquired by inheritance should be separate for divorce purposes down the road. But a lot of kids will just take that money and throw it at the house and pay down the joint mortgage and, you know, subject it to a divorce later on down the road. But there are all kinds of things that the kids do. And again, mm-hmm. After somebody dies, you know, the kids think, oh, here's a check. I don't have to do anything special with it. Well, you probably ought to sit down with somebody and say, look, mom died. I inherited $50,000. Is there anything special that I should be doing with this money? And again, the idea is if you set that aside in a special account, isolate that money as the inherited money, and don't put any more money in there. Don't put your own money in there,
yeah.
but use it and say, that's mom's money. That money came from my mother. If there is ever a divorce down the road, that money should be kept separate for divorce purposes. But things like that, you know, again, people think that this is intuitive and it's automatic and it's very straightforward, but there are some mistakes you can make very easily if you don't sit down with somebody and ask the advice. It's not rocket science, but you need to ask the right questions.
Yeah. I thought it'd be nice if we bought a Corvette with it.
There you go. What year? What are you looking for?
Well, I don't know. Might even be a new one, depending on the amount.
I had a lady drive into my parking lot with one of the new 2014s. Oh, I just about melted. Gorgeous, gorgeous car. Yeah. Although I'm kind of inclined to like the 60s versions better.
Yes.
It's just
yes.
What I grew up on, you know.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
They're very good too, but you got to find one that's in good shape, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Preferably without rust, right?
Yes. Well, they're plastic.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's the nice part about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What else do we have in the legal field that people might want to know about this morning?
Well, I'm trying to think if there's any new legal. There was a Supreme Court case came down, and I'm not sure whether Nathan talked about this last month. Supreme Court came down and held that beneficiary IRAs are subject to lawsuits and garnishments and bankruptcies.
Oh.
So you've got money socked away in your IRA.
Right.
If you get sued, they can't get it. If you file bankruptcy, it's not an asset, okay? Because it's your money, and it's protected under federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 401Ks, IRAs, 403Bs. Now that's the O.J. joke, okay? O.J.'s got a multimillion-dollar judgment against him from the Goldman family. They can't get at it because it's tucked away in his retirement account,
all
right? Now, the question became, all right, what if you pass that IRA on to your kids when you die? And now your kid has a beneficiary IRA with $50,000 in it, and he gets sued. Is that IRA protected under federal law because it's an IRA? And the Supreme Court said, no, it's not. It's not your money. It's your father's money or your mother's money. And the Supreme Court said that beneficiary IRA is not protected against lawsuits and bankruptcies and creditors. So that's a relatively new change in the law. It doesn't affect everybody, but it's kind of nice to know.
Well, if you have an IRA, it's nice to know.
Yeah, if you've got one, you need to know if it's your IRA, it's protected. That's good to know. And if it's not your IRA, if you inherited from somebody, and you need to know it's not protected.
Right.
But so that's relatively new. Other than that, I haven't heard any new wrinkles in any of the real popular cases that have been floating around. They're out there. Anna Nicole Smith, I'm anxious to see what happened with that whole thing. And the Michael Jackson estate is taking on a life of its own. And who gets the kids and who gets the millions and that kind of stuff.
That's really amazing how far they can go in court on that. sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Where there's money involved, unfortunately, there are lawyers involved. and everybody lawyers up. And, you know, a lot of times it's really sad because more often than not, a large percentage of the estate typically gets gobbled up
mm-hmm.
in legal fees. And again, coming full circle, if you've got things set up properly, that can be minimized. That can be minimized by having a will that's clear, or having a trust that's clear, or having your wishes, you know, clearly spelled out in some form of a document. Will save a lot of those attorney fees at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you remember the Farrah Fawcett case.
Yes.
Yeah, she had, you know, a multi-million-dollar painting of her, and there's a big lawsuit with the University of Texas at Austin as to who got that painting. And that was recently resolved. But, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, people are going to fight over everything. So if you can...
Hey, if there's a possibility of making money...
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that people are driven by money, but the reality is that's what drives most of them.
Yeah.
But to the extent that you can nip it in the bud and make it very clear, and, you know, some wills and some trusts even have I call it a poison pill that says, "Hey, if you file a lawsuit trying to, you know, get in the way of a clean administration of this estate, if you're belligerent and you start filing willy nilly lawsuits and motions, you're not going to get anything."
Yeah.
Well, that shuts a lot of kids up.
Yeah.
You know, they may not be getting everything they want, but if they know, you know, they're going to lose everything if they file a lawsuit. They're going to think a second time about it. Now, there are limits on that, because if there is a good faith reason for filing the lawsuit, if there's good cause, then they can bring it and they don't lose everything. But if they just kind of willy-nilly keep throwing spaghetti up against the legal wall, seeing if something will stick and try and extort some money, a poison pill provision in a will or a trust can certainly work. It can be very effective in avoiding lawsuits.
Ken, I see a lot of these, I'd say, big firm attorneys that almost guarantee you a large settlement of some kind.
Yeah.
And what's the deal on that?
They can advertise all they want. What I find is interesting is a lot of personal injury attorneys will charge a flat one-third, because that's what everybody charges.
Oh, yeah.
Quite frankly, I think that's an antitrust violation somewhere. But there's an attorney, I forget the guy's name, on the east side of the state, who will do it for 22.5%.
Really?
And I'm anxious to see how much.
Here.
Okay, let him in.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yes, in regards to a contract, can I get free advice?
Will you what? I didn't hear your question.
I have a contract with DirecTV, which ends in April next year. But in the meantime, I plan to move, hopefully, in November.
Uh-huh.
And where I'm moving to, they have cable.
Oh, I see.
You know, it really depends on the contract. Most companies will not enforce that kind of contract if you're moving. Now, if you just wanted to change over from one company to another where you're currently at, they'll probably stick you. But if you're going to move, most companies realize that, and they won't stick you with it. But you know, it's worth a phone call to the company. But and it really depends on the contract, which obviously I can't see from here. But I would call them and let them know, and just say, "Hey, I'm moving. I'd like to cancel my contract." Don't tell them where. Okay.
I see.
If you're moving down the street, I think you've got less of an argument. Say, "But look, I'm moving. How do I cancel my contract?"
Uh-huh.
Okay. They don't need to know that you're moving down the street. If they ask you where you're moving and you tell them you're moving down the street, well, you'll address it at that time. But just let them know that you're moving and you need to cancel the contract, and they usually just cancel the contract.
Oh, well, I'll cross my fingers.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I guess we won't have time to take this last call coming in, but, it's a good idea to cancel all the contracts.
Sure. And sometimes you actually get money back, like from your
homeowners
insurance company and that kind of stuff. You usually get a little check back, and It's like finding that $20 in your pants after you pull it out of the dryer. Oh, it's always a good feeling.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Ken, we're out of time, and I want to thank you very much for coming in this morning and explaining some things to us that we don't understand too well because we haven't had the education, of course. It makes us illegal.
Well, the education didn't do it. It's the School of Hard Knocks and on-the-job training that taught me what I know. But it's been great to see you. Good talking with you.